This is the Young Farmers Podcast. I'm Lindsay Lesher-Shute. If you call up your local Farm Service Agency office, you might get this message.
We are not in the office at this time. We are on furlough due to the lapse in government funding. Please note that we do not have access to email or voicemail due to the current lapse in funding. We look forward to returning your message once funding has been restored.
They're closed. They're closed because we are in day 18 of a federal government shutdown. This shutdown, initiated by the Trump administration, is basically a fight over the southern border of our country and whether or not we want to wall it off. To find out how the government shutdown is impacting farmers, I called up two people, Helena Botten-Miller-Evich, senior food and agriculture reporter for Politico, and Andrew Barsness, a grain farmer from Minnesota.
Hi, I'm Emily from Three Springs Farm in Oaks, Oklahoma. I've been a member of the National Young Farmers Coalition since 2011 because I believe in having representation in Washington for young farmers. For $35 a year, you can join too. In addition to being part of a bright and just future for agriculture in the United States, you'll also get discounts like 10% off So True Seed and 10% off Farm Tech. To join, go to youngfarmers.org.
Hey, Andrew, this is Lindsay. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I can. Where are you calling from today?
I'm on the road near Alexandria, Minnesota. And it's 14 degrees and pretty windy. So if you have any issues hearing me, let me know. Maybe I can pull off on the side of the road or something.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. Thanks for making time today. I know you are busy. Andrew, just to get started, will you please introduce yourself?
Yeah. I'm Andrew Barsness, and I grow organic grain, wheat, corn, soybeans. This is my 8th year farming and my 1st year being certified organic.
Yeah, congratulations. That's really exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, it is.
So, Andrew, how does the federal government interact with your farm operations? Like, what do you depend on from USDA?
I might not be farming if it weren't for the FSA. Every year, I have an annual operating loan to cover expenses and input costs through the FSA, as well as loans for new equipment and general guidance on how to navigate financial challenges of farming. So I can't say enough good things about the FSA.
And so every year you take out a loan from the agency?
I do, yeah. I mean, I approached several traditional lenders and banks, and because of my limited equity and capital being so young, they were wary of lending me the adequate funds that I would need to farm the way that I want to farm. Whereas FSA was able to accommodate me in that way.
And when do you normally take out that loan from FSA?
Well, it's usually about this time of year.
Uh-huh.
And so with the government shutdown, there's a couple of issues that I'm running into. One is because of my current loan with FSA, FSA has a lien on my crop and any proceeds from the sale of my crop. And so even though I've sold my crop, I cannot access that money until it has gone through FSA and they have taken what they need to cover or pay back my loans and then release the remaining amount to me. So that's a challenge because I need that money to pay bills and operating expenses and hopefully prepay some 2019 expenses as well and take advantage of early pay discounts on things like seed. And so that's the first issue. And then when it comes to planning and preparing for the upcoming season, this is the time of year when I should be in the FSA office talking to my loan officer about what I want to do for the upcoming season and figuring out if I'm going to have the financial capability to do what I want to do. I'd like to expand this upcoming season and farm some more land, which require maybe some new equipment and increased funding. But I can't really figure out if I'm going to be able to do that or not until I can talk to someone and say, figure that out. And in farming, especially organic farming, timing is everything. And so the sooner you get kind of things rolling along, the better. And the more everything gets pushed back, you start running into problems. And I need to be talking to landlords and seed dealers. And, but it's hard to do if you don't know what you have to work with.
Yeah, of course. I mean, what would happen if you weren't able to access that capital, that operating loan for the 2019 season?
It's a good question. It would be not good. I'm not sure what I would do. At this point in my farming career, I rely heavily on FSA, and I'm sure I'm not alone.
Absolutely not. Yep. Can you remind me of the crops that you grow at your farm, or what did you grow last season in 18?
I had all corn last year. I also grow soybeans and wheat, and then next year maybe some hay, and then in the future maybe things like some edible beans, and industrial hemp was legalized in Minnesota now, so that's an interesting prospect. Yeah, last year was all corn, and I think that the government payment for corn was 1 cent per bushel, which is...
So you were not planning to apply for that assistance?
No, I wasn't. No.
You know, I know on this Friday there was some industry reports that are due out on commodity prices and supply. Are those something that you generally look at? I know that that is something that I've heard farmers in the news talking about, being pretty concerned if those aren't produced on time, which they're not going to be at this point.
I do sort of pay attention to it peripherally. The organic market's a bit more domestic compared to the conventional grain market, but there is some correlation there, so I do try to pay a little bit of attention. And typically when there's a higher demand in general worldwide, grain benefits, so it's not a good sign when demand and exports are not doing very well. So, yeah.
Any other thoughts on the shutdown? Any other impacts that you're seeing? Are you hearing anything from your neighbors? Are they concerned?
Well, I would say that there's a lot of concerning dialogue in general in and around the current state of the farm economy and industry in general. A lot of talk of farmers going bankrupt. It's just kind of a real tough time for especially conventional grain farmers with the state of the farm economy. And I mean, it's not a great time for something like government shutdown to be happening when farmers should be kind of going full speed ahead instead of sitting around and waiting for something to happen.
Mm-hmm. All right, Andrew. Well, good luck to you. And I guess we'll all hope that the USDA is up and back in business very soon. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Talk to you soon. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Great. Is this better?
Yes, it actually is. Thank you so much. That is terrific.
Oh, good. Yeah, there's just like one tiny little room, and you never know when someone's coming.
Thanks for getting on the phone. Just to begin with, will you introduce yourself?
I'm Helena Bottomiller-Evich. I'm a senior food and agriculture reporter at Politico.
So, Helena, we are on day 18 now of the government shutdown. What is it like reporting on a shutdown? Like, who talks to you from these agencies? Are you getting people who are off the record, or what are the press channel communications like in these moments?
It's a little bizarre because a lot of the communications staff that we usually work with are furloughed. Some are not. You have to figure out which ones are still on the job and which ones aren't. But then you do hear kind of whispers, and you'll get tips from people that are inside the agencies or maybe have been furloughed. You know, have you thought about X? I think what's different about this shutdown is that because it has now dragged on for longer than any of our other shutdowns, usually during shutdowns, you don't get to the point where something like school meals is a question, or, and now we're talking about SNAP, like does SNAP run out of funding? I mean, all of these questions that don't normally become huge topics during shutdowns are going to become huge topics. So I think we're scrambling a little bit to figure out, like, what are all of the programs we need to ask about that we don't normally track during shutdowns?
And I imagine some of that tracking or the problems that are arising, those questions are coming from the states and other entities, even NGOs and universities that are expecting funds from the federal government and no one's there to disperse them, or the funds are not available.
Yeah, I mean, I think I encourage nonprofits, state agencies, individuals, you know, farmers, beginning farmers, whoever, to reach out to reporters, because sometimes that is how we find out about the impact. You know, so-and-so was about to close on a loan and now they can't. And flagging those examples is really helpful, because sometimes these stories seem really abstract. And when you can really paint the picture that there is human impact, I think that's important. I was in a Lyft the other day, and the person, the driver said, you know, we now have federal employees driving Lyft. And also there's a huge downturn in demand at the same time. So I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I didn't even think about that piece of the impact. It really does permeate farther than you would initially think. So I think that's kind of the phase we're entering, where we're going to have to start thinking about all these secondary impacts. And then beyond that, what's the next impact that we're not even thinking about?
Hmm. Can you tell me who's still on the job at USDA? What is the direct impact for that agency at this point?
Well, a lot of employees are not on the job. So most are not. I don't know that they've actually given a hard percentage yet. The way this kind of works, my impression right now, is these agencies haven't dealt with this length yet. So they are, they're still determining kind of what their final numbers are going to be. And it kind of fluctuates, like, based on what you need. So things that are very much still functioning, things like meat inspection, you know, the Food Safety and Inspection Service, with OISIN, those inspectors, considered essential. Although now I'm reminding myself, you know, I don't know how long that funding goes. I don't know if that can just continue forever. But those things that have to do with protection of property, human life, things that are really urgent tend to be accepted. But those employees are not getting paid for the most part. So I'm trying to think of a really good example. If a building needs to be guarded, you know, that would probably still be happening, but they're not going to be issuing new policy, and those workers are not going to be getting paychecks. So it's a very, very challenging time for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the questions I was going to ask about the meat inspectors at slaughterhouses, because that has a huge impact for our farmers. Of course, it takes more than a year sometimes just to get a date at a slaughterhouse for your animals. And if you're doing USDA, so you can be able to sell at a farm store or by the cut or at a grocery store or whatnot, you have to go USDA, and there has to be a USDA employee there. There has to be an inspector there. So those employees, they're still on the job now, but they're not being paid. How long is that going to last?
I think you're asking, like, the big question, right, is how long can this continue? And do you have, I think, ultimately, a lot of employees who work for the federal government who decide, you know, I can't go through this again. So even if the shutdown does end in a couple of weeks, looking at the disruption and the financial stress, you could certainly have some flight. And I know there are parts of USDA that were already sort of having staffing issues that are worried that the shutdown is just going to exacerbate things. Because if you could work for, you know, a consulting firm or another, you know, entity that isn't going to shut down, you might find that more appealing. Mm. And so there is that risk. And I don't know, you're actually reminding me that I think some of the details about how FSIS keeps its inspectors on the job are probably would probably be a good thing for us to look at, because I'm not sure that applies like across the board to every, you know, entity. I mean, usually we just are told that that's considered essential, but that's a really good question because that could be really disruptive. I'm making a list. Actually, I'm on the Hill. I'm on Capitol Hill today. I'm making a list of things. These are other questions.
All right. Please ask that question for us. Yeah, because that could be incredibly disruptive. I mean, the situation with slaughterhouses is so precarious anyways, particularly with a small farmer where we don't have that vertical integration, where we don't own those facilities, right? And so to have, you know, to miss a date or to, you know, have a slowdown of some sort could have a big impact for Wow, it's just hard to sort of wrap your mind around all of the various impacts. You've done some great reporting in the last couple of days on SNAP and how SNAP might be impacted, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, food stamps. It costs about $4.7 billion a month to run. Apparently, it's going to be out of money pretty soon, but there may or may not be sort of a reserve fund. What is the latest on those benefits?
Yeah, it has been like pulling teeth to get anything out of USDA about this. And it's a little bit surprising considering how big this program is. And, you know, we're on, what, day 18 now of the shutdown. So I've, as a reporter, been pretty disappointed with the lack of just like basic information that they've been providing. But as of yesterday or the day before, they just said, you know, we're looking at our options. That's it that we've been able to get out of them in terms of what their contingency plan is. But it is true that SNAP costs about $4.7 billion to run. We know they have at least $3 billion in reserve. That's kind of considered the minimum, although they won't comment on that or confirm it. But there are several people I'm talking to who think that USDA has more reserve than that, more flexibility. And also keep in mind, this is a mandatory entitlement program, so they are legally obligated to continue these benefits. If we get to the point where they actually run out of money, a lot of big questions are going to be answered that we've never had to ask. So things like, what happens when there's not enough money? Do you ration benefits? Are they legally allowed to ration benefits? That's never been tested. And also, how much flexibility does USDA really have to move money around? I mean, the Secretary of Agriculture has what I think budget people call 7% authority, so he can move money around as needed. So if there are other places at USDA where they have money, can they move it to keep SNAP going? Do they think they should? I don't know the answer to those questions. But I mean, this is a huge program, 39 million people. So the fact that we are in January and asking about how February is going to get paid is remarkable. Like, we have never been at this point at this scale. And Congress, by the way, has never let SNAP run out of money to the point where benefits can't be paid out since the program was created forever ago. So this would be truly uncharted territory. And everyone I've been talking to really hopes that they will not let it get to that point.
So we're at day 18. My understanding is the longest shutdown was 21 days. I guess in an instance of 1985, during that shutdown, SNAP was not impacted at that during that time.
Yeah, I've been told SNAP benefits have never not gone out. So what's weird is SNAP is a mandatory program and it's an entitlement, but it is appropriated. So at any point, you know, if there isn't enough money, they can pass a supplemental, or they do need to pass a vehicle that has appropriations. But it has really never been something that people fight about because it's mandatory. So under federal law, that it is what it is. Like, for example, when we follow all these appropriations bills, you know, the ag appropriations bill, there's always so much fun policy in there. They talk about pollinators and horse slaughter and school meals and all these policies get brought up. We never even look at the SNAP appropriations part of it because it's just considered kind of like an autopilot thing. Although that, I guess that may change now that we're, you know, facing this issue.
And is there discussion about figuring out a vehicle just to fund SNAP, or is this really being used as a leverage point to get everything back up and running?
They definitely could pass a bill that would just fund SNAP. But your question about leverage is a really good one. I mean, our headline yesterday was SNAP had been turned into a pawn in the shutdown fight because the White House last week actually raised concerns about SNAP running out of money before anti-hunger groups did, which was sort of peculiar. And it sort of led to this scramble where everyone said
some new messaging for the
White House. It was sort of like, wait, is this real? Like, so we have definitely been in a little bit of like the twilight zone with this part of the debate, but it is true that, you know, SNAP doesn't just have unlimited funding to continue. So, and Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue has been totally silent on this. You know, he hasn't been tweeting since the end of December. He hasn't been issuing statements or anything. And it's pretty remarkable to watch USDA not respond to all this coverage, right? So there's all this coverage saying SNAP's about to run out. And imagine if you're a low-income head of household and you're seeing that and you're seeing there's uncertainty. I mean, it does fuel, I think, stress on an individual level. And we don't know exactly what their plan is.
So you all quoted a department spokesperson for USDA, Tim Murtaugh, and he said the best course of action would be for Congress to send a legitimate appropriations bill to the president to end the lapse in funding. So that's pretty politicized, loaded language there. Is that unusual for USDA to weigh in that way? Do you feel like that's a reflection of like where Sonny Perdue is, or is this just a department spokesperson?
You know, that's a really good question. I think it is a little bit unusual. I was talking to a staffer on Capitol Hill yesterday, and they were saying, you know, if this were the Bush administration, Reagan, and they would be scrambling to make sure that there was some certainty on SNAP. Like, it truly is, like, worrisome for many, many people to have those kinds of news stories out there. So I think there is a recognition that this is a little bit different, that this isn't, there isn't a scramble to reassure. And that comment, yeah, to say that they should pass appropriations, I think everyone agrees with that, but we don't see that being the imminent, you know, possibility. It does seem that there needs to be a bigger deal made on the border wall, you know, between Democrats and President Trump. So where this all is headed, I truly do not know.
And immigration being such a critical farm issue, too, have you heard from many of the farm groups talking about their prioritization of a wall? Or do you feel like they are really sort of playing into, you know, to the president's base and we need to build this wall? Or do you feel like they're like, let's move ahead and get this bill done?
Yeah, such a good question. I think it definitely varies depending on, you know, obviously, as you well know, farmers, you're not, you know, of one opinion on things. My sense is there is still deep support for President Trump among agricultural producers broadly. But what I hear when I talk to people is there is still a lot of distinction between what he's doing on various issues. You know, producers will very much support the president and his overall mission and like the idea that he's putting on pressure, but really dislike the tariffs and the retaliatory tariffs. The wall is not something I hear a lot about from producers. I think there is some support for that, but there is also a pretty strong rancher landowner contingent, especially in Texas, that is very against building a wall, especially if they own land that would be split or cut off or, you know, in any way affected. So there are some pretty fierce, but it's pretty, I think, dependent on where they are in the country and how they view the issue. And I think immigration in general is, there's a lot of different views in agriculture too. I mean, if you grow a specialty crop, you tend to, I think, have a pretty different view of immigration and the labor needs than if you're more traditional row crop farmer, just because I think you need far less labor. So there's, I think a lot of difference there, which it's sometimes hard to differentiate those things, because agriculture has been one of the largest and I think loudest voices supporting, you know, having like comprehensive immigration reform. There is pretty strong support for that, but I think the support and the opinions are much more diverse within the community than we always recognize, if that makes
so,
sense.
Speaking of row crops, the government shutdown has impacted the payments to farmers to support them through the trade war. What have you been hearing from farmers on that? Or is there a sense of how many farmers are being impacted by the shutdown who were, you know, anticipating submitting an application before that January 15th deadline?
I think everyone's waiting to see if Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue will consider delaying that deadline just because of this disruption. And I don't know that we know how many farmers have been impacted yet, but what we were told, I think, as of a week ago, was that if you had already had your production certified and sort of already had your ducks in a row, those payments would still get processed, but you can't start the process. That's all on hold. You know, there's definitely frustration about it, but I don't feel like I've heard full-blown, like, five-alarm, like, panic. And I don't know if that's because, you know, we are all sort of assuming or hoping that the shutdown won't last very long. And so if you know what you're getting, you're sort of, like, planning for it anyway, whether or not it comes right now or in a month or 2 months or whatever the delay ends up being. I'm not sure what the reason is, but I haven't heard as much concern, I think, about that than we were expecting. But as I mentioned, you know, we're now at the point where we need to start coming back to these issues, because I think if we, especially if we go past this week or into next, then we start to really be in uncharted territories.
Well, and even I suppose if those payments or those new applications are being processed, even just the agency is in the position to distribute the payments. Farm Service Agency is closed. All of the county offices are closed. And I feel like once we, and for Farm Service Agency in particular, as we get closer to the season, the spring season, I mean, you're absolutely right. Like every week counts for applications for operating loans, farm ownership loans, all that stuff outside of the trade aid payments. That is going to become much more pressing for farmers across the country. Also, are NRCS offices closed as well? Like, I know EQIP had some funding, or there's some conservation assistance that's still available. Do you know the update there?
I don't know. I know that initially they were given sort of mixed guidance, but I'm adding that to my list now. There's so many things we need to check in on.
There's so much that the USDA does, federal government does, right? But even just the USDA, that it's hard to, you know, sort of wrap your mind around, and certainly you're reporting around all of the different stories that are coming out of this. And I guess the last bit, FDA inspectors are also not on the job. Or are they working without pay? Is that another sort of one of those situations like the slaughterhouse inspectors where they're required to respond to outbreaks, but they're not doing sort of the preventative work? Like what's the story there?
If you're working on a high-risk recall or something like that, you're considered accepted, which is basically just you are still on the job. Those folks are not paid right now, and there is some inspection happening, but we haven't gotten a good handle around what all is happening. It's probably mostly high risk and things that they have determined are like really like there is a human health risk. We had a story yesterday about how FDA has changed its policy internally because they realized their inspectors who have to travel for any reason, like if they're doing a high-risk inspection, you know, they're going to be, it's normal to put travel expenses on your credit card and then get reimbursed. Well, if you're not getting paid and you're putting hotels and airfare on your credit card, that could be like a much more stressful situation.
Yeah,
so they're trying to charge things internally. And it's like those, again, it's another example of things you wouldn't think about that logistic, but I think they're having to work through a lot of these challenges.
So, Helena, is there any light at the end of the tunnel here? I mean, is there anyone who's sort of really crafting a real way forward here? What's your prediction for, you know, the remainder of this week? How long do you think that this is going to go on?
I really, truly do not know. As of yesterday, there was no meeting scheduled between Democrats and President Trump and all the folks that need to get in the same room and make a deal eventually. I really, truly don't know that we have a sign that a positive sign that there is movement. I really don't know that we've had a positive sign. I wish I had a prediction for you, but I really don't.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, oftentimes it's like, you know, with the farm bill, there was a total impasse, but there were conversations still happening, right?
Yes.
Always negotiations on small things, perhaps, or even, you know, just kind of a framework put forward. But it really does seem like a stalemate here. Like, there's just no traction.
I keep thinking if you can't just lock everyone in a room and make them do it, but that's obviously not an option here. So, but I encourage your listeners, your members, your colleagues, keep flagging examples of shutdown impact to reporters, local reporters, national reporters. Our team at Politico would love to hear them. Because we are trying to get our arms around this just as much as everyone else.
Will do. Helena, thank you so much for getting on the line, and we will be following your reporting to see what's next.
Thanks
so much. Thank you, Helena, for your reporting, and Andrew, thanks for making the time. And honestly, thank you to all of the federal employees for all that you do, and particularly those federal employees right now who are conducting critical services, inspections, and the like, who are getting no pay. If you want the USDA back, I certainly hope that everyone listening will text ACTION to 40649. You'll be added to our activist network, and we will text you a link to directly connect with a member of Congress who represents you, and you can demand to get the USDA back up and running. This podcast was edited by Hannah Beal and recorded at Radio Kingston. Talk to you next week.